This is How Success Happens, where we talk to polar explorers, war correspondents, founders, ultramarathoners, authors, artists, and a range of other unique personalities to help you understand the capabilities behind how success happens.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
When I'm training for an ultramarathon, anywhere from 100 to 120 miles a week would be in my in my training cycle. Lots of miles.
You sold something like 250,000 books.
I'm the managing editor at entrepreneur.com and your host, Linda Lissina. Today, we have a very special guest, Hugh Forrest, the chief programming officer at South by Southwest. He's worked for the Austin Festival since 1989 and has seen it grow from a celebration of music to a platform for tech, movies, education, and politics and more that at its best changes how we share, learn, and think. He'll talk about his experience with the festival, how it's changed him, and what we can all learn. Hi, Hugh, how are you?
Great. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. Pleased as punch to have you. you have been with the festival for many, many years. Tell me a little bit about what your job is, so the folks understand what a chief programming officer does.
Chief programming officer means that I oversee the conference programming, panels, presentations, on the interactive side, on the music side, and on the film side. I also oversee the festival content that we do, i.e. this huge music festival and this booming film festival also. So all that, when you boil that down, it means I answer a lot of emails.
Yes, no, absolutely, absolutely. For folks who have not been able to make it down to the South by Festival, give me a sense for all of the range and manner, the circus of things that they could experience, just so they have a full sense of what happens there, especially when we're talking about programming.
From a programming perspective, we'll have this conference that goes on for 8-9 days total. We'll have more than 1,000 total panels and presentations, actually more like 2,000 total. Those cover content in 24 different tracks that range from code and programming to health, to government, all kinds of things that we think are very, very compelling and relevant to digital creatives. We have this giant music festival, which will have 2,000 bands from all over the U.S. and all over the world, almost every kind of music involved. Typically, we'll have about 80 to 90 Austin clubs. Each club hosts 5 bands per night or so. And on the film festival side, we'll have lots of premieres, lots of first runs, narrative features, short features, documentaries. So all that put together, South by Southwest is a celebration of very, very creative people who are doing things in very, very different industries. But the bottom line and the kind of common thread through all that is they're very creative, thinking about new ways to be creative, meeting other creative people and coming up with new ideas. The fact that it happens in Austin, which is a very creative city, spring is happening, it works really well.
Yeah. And around how many events are there? How many panels and things? It's in the thousands.
Probably about 2,000 total panels and presentations. Every year we try to pare it down, and we start paring it down a little, and then maybe it jumps back up a little more than we intended to. But one of the reasons we've got so many sessions is we get so many good ideas and so many creative people, and we really want to try to give a voice to all these people and provide our attendees with as much relevant, interesting, intriguing, thought-provoking content as possible.
In the time that you've been there, working on the festival, what's a way that the festival has changed that wouldn't be obvious to somebody who, you know, who's an outsider?
I mean, simply the scale of the thing, because I think that when most people think of South by Southwest, who have been to it, who have seen media accounts of it, you think of the event in 2017 or 2018, and you think, well, that's how it always was. And having been involved since you know, way back in the dark ages of 1989 or so, it was a much, much smaller event then. And it was, you know, what we had then would be unrecognizable to people now. And I think that that is something that's good to emphasize and good for entrepreneurs and your listeners to think of, is that it took a long while to get where we are now. We're still growing in many ways, improving. But it wasn't that we just turned on a switch and it happened to how it is now in those early years. And the fact that we were small and we could make lots of mistakes, learn from those mistakes, get a little bigger, make incremental improvements, helped us get to where we are now. And you know, that's a really basic thing. But again, it's a really something that is important to remember, that it took a long, long while to get to where we are now.
And as it grows, you realize that the solutions that you had in place aren't going to work anymore. They were great a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but now, gosh, you're hitting a wall, right? Were there sort of walls that you hit that led to certain innovations that you have, like, say, the panel picker?
Well, a wall is maybe not quite the right way to describe it, but having worked on it for, you know, several years, I found this pattern to be the same every year, is that we get the best ideas from somebody who knew somebody, but inevitably those ideas would come in very, very late in the system and as we were close to the event, and it was kind of impossible for us to implement this great idea that someone had a week before the event. So tried to build this system and eventually implemented this system called the South by Southwest Panel Picker, which is essentially just a more formal way for people to get ideas into the pipeline. It developed at a time when crowdsourcing was becoming very popular, when the technologies that enabled that were becoming more familiar to more people. The fact that a lot of those technologies were in turn talked about at South by Southwest, and this, it was a community that was particularly interested in this kind of crowdsourcing stuff, really helped with the growth and success of the panel picker. Initially, we only used this panel picker system for the tech portion of the event, the interactive portion of the event, and we moved on and used it with, and have since used it with music and film also. So again, that has been a system that's helped us grow in a lot of ways, helped us stay relevant, I think, in terms of listening to the community, understanding little micro trends that are happening out there that we may not have understood otherwise, getting people involved with programming who are experts in their respective field, and lets us, the South by Southwest staff, do what we're expert in, which is sometimes organizing an event and letting the people who are experts in a specific kind of content speak on that content, and hopefully that leads to a better event.
Sure, yeah. When you're talking about identifying microtrends, right, what goes into that? Can you give me an example of a microtrend that bubbled up through the panel picker process and you or your team felt like, okay, here's something to listen to. We need to pay attention to this. What is it and what did you do?
Sure. One of the ones that's most obvious was in the panel picker for the 2017 event, so probably 18 months ago. We saw that there were, you know, 25 proposals, roughly 25, for chatbots. And fascinating, because there hadn't been any chatbot proposals before. And that was, you know, a reflection of over the summer Facebook Messenger coming out. People understanding how to do that. And so going from zero to 25, wow, that's something that we should take note of. And we implemented quite a few of those sessions into last year's event. On a broader scale, I would say over the last probably 10 years, maybe 5 years, we've seen a big escalation in the number of health-related proposals that have come into the event. And I think that illustrates how so much of technology at this point is focusing on health tech, med tech, biotech, whether it be our smartwatches, our smartphones, the national continued national discussion on healthcare. You know, again, when we started this kind of cycle, we were getting 50 to 70 proposals on health. We'll now get 500 or so, have made health a much, much bigger portion of the event. So in many ways, the panel picker guides us in terms of what our audience is interested in, what they want to see. It also, you know, there are times when we'll wish that we had a certain kind of thing, content more in the panel picker, and we have to kind of make decisions. Well, we didn't get much of this in the panel picker this year, but I think that our audience is wrong. I think we should be directing them more in this direction. Yeah. So, it has a lot of benefits. It has some challenges also in terms of an organizational system.
Sure. No, of course. You were an English major. I was an English major as well. I think that every day I use my ability to be a close reader and to tease out trends or to make quick takes on things. And I notice that folks who haven't been forced to read the Fairy Queen and explicate some horrendous, very vellum paper in tiny print. It can be a little bit less quick, right? To look for trends, to have those quick takes. You know, when you are running this festival and you have to depend so much on a little bit of instinct, but a lot of close reading and critical thinking, like, can you tell me a little bit about that? Tell me about your eye. What are you looking for?
Well, I mean, one of the many things, for instance, that the panel picker does is it helps us identify people who are going to be have an attention to detail. Mm-hmm. It's an application system. And if someone, this is kind of the English major in me, if someone enters a panel picker proposal, which is full of typos and incomplete sentences, and we've asked them to proof that their entry before they put it in. That's an indication to me that if they're not, you know, focused enough on quality control in June and July when they're putting this thing in into the system, that it's going to be harder for us to get them to be focused on quality control in February and March. So, you know, it's like the parable or whatnot, or the story of the pink M&M, where the band wants a pink M&M and their rider. Yeah. They don't care about the pink M&M. They care that the promoter has the attention to detail to be able to find a pink M&M if they want one. And this is part of the upside of the panel picker, is to kind of see who has the energy, enthusiasm, attention to detail to put together a strong proposal. Now, there's certainly a lot of proposals that have some challenges on sentence structure or whatnot that end up coming in the event. But, you know, that is a kind of first way to cut down the big pool of entrants to a slightly smaller pool of entrants. You do tend to get a lot of very similar ideas in the panel picker. One of the things that we've changed in recent years, we ask for a video of the speaker, if it's a solo presentation or one of the speakers on the session. Certainly, it's a lot easier to get videos now because almost everyone has a video of them talking in some way. But one of the realizations, the more we've done the panel picker, is that you're taking a three-dimensional process of speaking and reducing it to paper. And someone can have a great proposal, fantastic, but if they're a boring speaker, it tends to be boring on site. Someone can have a proposal that's meh, but if they're a great speaker, they can make that thing come alive on stage. So that's one of the reasons we have the video and try to spend time watching that also.
On your maybe toughest day at the very beginning when you first started, what did that look like?
I'm not sure that those were the toughest days. I think it's tougher, you know, the more you grow and the more challenges you absorb, that becomes in some ways tougher. But in those earlier days, the challenge was, you know, we would put together what I thought was a strong program, had all these great speakers, and it just didn't feel like, you felt like you're kind of, you know, shouting into an empty room in terms of struggling to get as many attendees as you wanted to get to the event. And why can't we grow? Why can't we grow as fast as we want to grow? And so in some ways, you know, it was as mystifying to me why we couldn't grow when we did as when we had this 10-year growth spurt from essentially 2004 to 2014, and why it happened then there. I mean, there are a lot of good reasons why it happened then there, but it was, in some ways equally mystifying there.
But there was also some practicalities, right? There were certain parts of the festival that were funding newer parts of the festival. Tell me a little bit about the practical side, you know, that buttressed that. You know, you think you want it to grow. What was missing? The times that you wanted to grow, what was missing?
Well, those early years, music popped really right out of the gate. Had success in a way that other things we tried to do didn't. And music started in 1987. We added in 1994 this what was called multimedia and film. And again, I was working primarily on the multimedia thing, and that was when, you know, we thought we had these great speakers and we did have great speakers, but it just wasn't growing as fast. The fact that we had this music event that was essentially paying the bills for multimedia and allowed us to survive some pretty lean years, turned out to be pretty neat. Yeah. And I think that, you know, when I'm talking to people, often relate that to, if you're an entrepreneur, don't quit your day job. You know, have this thing that supports your passion, but don't give up that thing until your passion is really ready to bloom. So, you know, we were, this multimedia event was relatively small. We made lots of mistakes, more so than we do now. We learned from those mistakes. We got incrementally better. And we ended up being at the right place at the right time on a lot of this social media stuff, right around 2004 when this began to pop, and enjoyed some very, very strong growth. And then one of the, you know, kind of fascinating things is how that that kind of structure has changed, where the tech portion of the event survived because of music initially, and now the tech portion tends to support music more, which is similar to a lot of content industries at this point.
If you look back at maybe when you first started, what's something that you you never would have done, you know, back then, that now you're like, gosh, like this is my bread and butter. This is a routine that is really, you know, helpful, practical, useful.
When I started at South by Southwest, I never kind of thought this was a long-term career thing. Yeah. It was I'll do this a year and then I'll do something else. And I'd always wanted to be a writer. I still want to be a writer when I grow up. But I always thought, you know, I'll do this one more year and then I'll try going back to writing. More recently, I've grudgingly accepted this maybe is my career, and so become more committed to it. I've become.
I think it's good.
I've become a lot more driven in terms of just having a routine to, get up at a certain hour in the morning and do emails for a couple hours, knock those out. And I think that's one of the things that I'm pretty good at is creating a routine, being disciplined to follow that routine, and using that routine to kind of wade through the chaos that is South by Southwest and often self-created chaos there. Over that process, over that time span of 25 years, I think I've become a little more organized in doing this, a little more understanding and of what the 10 to 12 month cycle is of South by Southwest, of what we can do now, what we need to do now to get this out of, to kind of get this part of the event out of the way much earlier in the season.
What is that routine? Tell me a little bit about how your day unfolds.
I try to get up maybe 4:30 or 5, do a couple hours of email, mainly because that's the only time during the day that I can do email uninterrupted. My son, 7 years old, will wake up at 6:30 or so and start playing YouTube, and then or start playing the iPad and getting on YouTube and stuff like that. And I'll typically go into the office 8:30 or 9, but then once I'm in the office, I'm generally meeting with people all day and not really able to attack my inbox anymore. I think that one of my strengths is meeting with people. But I also know that it's also the biggest time suck on my schedule, and I'm always like, gosh, can I cut back on that meeting process to create more time? But you know, the more direction, the more face-to-face direction that I can give people, that feedback from people they can give me, I think the stronger we are.
But what is important? What makes an effective face-to-face, you know, meeting with you and anybody, or somebody on your team? What makes it effective?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's simply the process of meeting. Whether we're talking about work or whether we're talking about how their weekend was, it is that process of showing your existence in this organization is important to me. I'm interested in what you're doing. I want you to be engaged. If we end up talking about work stuff and can communicate something faster than we can via email or via text, then so much the better. I'm still, you know, learning how to do these meetings better and learning how to organize them better. But you know, I'm always amazed when talking to employees that have become less engaged, saying, well, why, when did you become less engaged? Well, when we quit meeting less. Understanding that that's a very important part of the process.
Sure. How do you tell when someone has become less engaged?
One of the easiest ways is seeing that it's taking them longer to complete the tasks they're supposed to do, taking longer to respond to emails, just seeing that they're less enthusiastic. And you know, as with a lot of jobs, ours can be very soul draining at times. It's a ton of details at South by Southwest. A lot that we get right, some that we don't get right. But if someone's not, you know, putting all their energy into it, it's pretty obvious pretty quickly they're going to fall behind, and pretty easy to see that.
Sure. And there's only so many hours still in the day. That remains constant, regardless of how many people on your staff or the needs that the organization has. How do you fix that? How do you fix that if somebody feels that they've lost that connection and then lost that engagement? You can't always fix it by just meeting with them more. Like, how do you cope and help?
Yeah, well, certainly much easier for me to try to engage via email or whatnot. Sure. Just simply because I'm pretty good at that. That's one of my best skills, I think, is just being able to shoot off emails quickly and seeing if we can engage that way. Whether it's a meeting outside of work to see if there are non-work things that are a factor in this person's falling behind a little, augmenting that with other meetings, with other people. But again, just trying to pull someone back in that way. And you know, my success there, sometimes I've had success, lots of other times I haven't had success. So it's a challenge.
Did you always meet with folks face-to-face?
I think I've been pretty good at that. And again, it's more a reflection of, you know, the when I've been in less a position of power in an organization, that was what I enjoyed. When the person above me would take the time to talk to me and give me more direction about what was good, what was not so good, what I thought we could improve on, you know, our successes, our failures, and trying to implement that to the people I manage.
I think that it's this very simple idea, but I think it gets lost so much when we talk about companies because, oh, we're remote, everyone can work, you just give everyone their to-dos, they're fine, you know, but there's still this element of in-person communication, especially when people say, oh, meetings are just a waste. You know, get rid of all your meetings. Those are the things that are taking away all of your actual productivity time, you know. But so much with meetings are really also planning, talking, learning the shorthand that organizations have, you know. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think that people are maybe not understanding how to, like, create connections? You know, however those might be, whether they're in email, whether they're in person. What do you think about that?
Well, this is certainly a debate that we've had many, many times at South by Southwest, as with many, many organizations of, well, we're doing too many meetings. No, we're not doing enough meetings. We're doing meetings that are too long. We're doing meetings that are too short.
Sure.
And I think we pared the meetings down a little bit.
Sure.
But, you know, when I look at my schedule and look at most other people's schedule, a lot of the time is in meetings. And again, I think that we have lots and lots of details to go over with, to go over, and that's why meetings are important. But at least half the meeting is just that process of being together and saying, and you know, reminding people that we are a team, that we're trying to work as a team, that the more we can work together as a team, the more effective we can become. And having a system that gives people moral support, tells them that hey, we're gonna do this thing. It's gonna be great. People are gonna come to Austin for South by Southwest. They're gonna have the time of their lives. There are things gonna go wrong, but we're gonna overcome it. Everything's gonna be perfect.
If you were at a meeting and most of your team were scanning through their phone on Twitter, you know, what would you do?
We've gone through time periods where we've had a basket where people had to put their phone in at the beginning of the meeting.
Yes.
And then we've abandoned that at times. I hate to get too sanctimonious about it because I know I'm as bad as anyone else. And it's kind of a nervous habit at this point with all of us that you turn on your phone. But I also think that detracts from the overall engagement and the utility of the meeting, so to speak. So, I mean, there are a few times where I'll connect with someone afterwards and say, hey, it'd be great if you could pay a little more attention during the meeting.
With South by Southwest, you have to plan so far in advance, and that is not natural for lots of people. It's not natural. How do you help people think in short, medium, and long term? How do you help them do that?
You're exactly right that it is not natural. And one of the criticisms, which is entirely fair, that we've gotten on the panel picker is you're asking people for ideas, you know, 9 months in front of the event, and particularly in this tech world that a lot of us are in, you know, something can change in 2 weeks. We can have some new tech that's released in mid-February that could be all the rage at South by Southwest, and you're going to miss that with this. We try to accommodate a little bit in the process for that, but we also are cognizant that a lot of the most interesting talks in an event like South by Southwest are more about creativity and inspiration, the big picture, as opposed to whatever the social media thing is at any given time. In terms of how do we talk to the staff and how do I talk to attendees and trying to get that long-term perspective, I have a kind of leaderboard outside my office that shows how many days are to South by Southwest. And so that somewhat helps frame the perspective. You know, it's trying to meet as much as, you know, continue weekly meetings during the off season. Certainly the panel picker has one of the many things that's done well is it's helped create buzz and interest around South by Southwest in the summer when typically there was not buzz and interest around South by Southwest, and just gets that whole season started, that whole cycle started a little bit earlier. And the concept being if you start that cycle of interest in June or July, you end up here versus if you start it in, you know, November, you end up down here at the event. So in many ways, that's been one of the the great wins from the panel picker is just transforming it more into a year-long process as opposed to a 5 or 6 month process of planning.
But even your team, right? So that evolved over time. I'm sure that there were folks who, you know, 10, 15 years ago may have balked a little bit. Why do we have to be thinking about this now? Or why is this important to resolve this week? Well, couldn't we do it next week or the week after? I think that planning is its own kind of discipline, and it's
absolutely
a learned, it's a habit. You know, can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the longer we've done South by Southwest, the more years we do it, we have a little bit better understanding of where our, you know, benchmarks need to be on the road from May to March, so to speak, what we need to have in place if we want to get to where we want to be. So becoming more organized in terms of establishing those benchmarks and trying to follow those benchmarks, and being a little more strict communicating to people that, hey, it's really important that we meet this now. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we continually have internally and externally is, you know, it's a small deadline that you're missing. And you missing that deadline isn't going to stop the world. But the problem is that when 10 other people miss that deadline, then things begin to snowball and we get off course very, very quickly. And so it's trying to remind people that they are part of a larger whole, that we all have to, you know, adhere to these deadlines if we want to get to where we want to go. And you know, in world of publications and prints, you certainly know this much, much better than we do.
Well, I think what's interesting about it is that helping someone see a project in a different way, where it's beyond your own personal role in it, in order to get to the long-term planning, in order to get even to hope to attack that discipline aspect, that habit, you have to get them to plug into mission,
sure,
right? Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how do you get them to plug into mission so that they understand why is it important that we do this now so we don't have to do it next week?
Well, I think that, again, part of that having a range of goals that we want to establish, that we want to adhere to, that we want to create, that we want to accomplish, having those relatively established in May or June, and we can tick those off as we get closer to March. Having this a better understanding of all the things we need to do. Now, understand as well, you know, that kind of changes a little bit every year.
Of course, yeah.
But a lot of the things don't change that much, and I think we've got a better understanding now of what we need to do to get there.
How many years did it take to sort of get to the point where maybe January was by January you were a little bit more open? Most of the big things were mostly done, and you know, how long did that take?
I think we're still getting, we're still moving there.
Yeah.
But I would say that, you know, it took me 10 years probably to realize that the momentum of this thing, again, you're going to start getting more and more people coming in the front door in January and February. And if you can create some space to absorb that, that's going to work better. And that some of the best things will come in January and February, that some of the biggest crises will come in January and February. You've got to, you know, have some bandwidth to accommodate that, and if you have that bandwidth, we're more likely to get where we want to be in March.
In your opinion, how common is it for people to understand a connection between that bandwidth and growth?
I think that, you know, a lot of our growth, there are many, many factors that went into our growth. And one of them is just being more organized, understanding the process better, trying to front load as much stuff as possible. We got lucky in a lot of ways that helped our growth. We were in the right place at the right time, a lot of things that helped our growth. But certainly with South by Southwest or with any other venture, the better you have a process, an understanding, an organizational framework, the more likely you're going to have success. And again, it took us a while to get there. We're still working on that process, but it's something that's helped us a lot in terms of becoming where we are now.
And I think that there's a common gap between that sort of understanding the discipline of where your time goes and knowing where it could go, like how you could grow. You could do more if you were more efficient.
Yeah. Well, I certainly, I'm sure like a lot of people, I wish I had more time to, you know, stand on top of myself and look down and see what I'm bogging down in and where I'm wasting my time on things that aren't essential and revamp accordingly. You know, one of the things that one of the many pieces that I think is part of our growth is about the time that we went on this growth spurt, I got pretty good at meditating, learned how to meditate. I think that helped me get a little more focused. The irony there, however, is that I do less meditating now because I'm more busy. And, you know, like, it's the one thing I cut out of my day when I am too busy. And I know that it kind of have a bigger effect than simply the 10 to 15 minutes that I would do it. But, you know, it is a constant process of trying to evaluate, is this the right thing I should be doing with my time? Is this the right thing that we should be doing with our time? You know, what we have, every year we're on this cycle that we've got X amount of hours, X amount of days, X amount of months until South by Southwest. And how can we spend that time, that limited amount of time and produce the best event possible? Mm-hmm. And we're constantly learning how to, you know, what are things that we should, take away from the system, and what are the things that we should put into the system, more of into the system.
When you started at South By, you know, email was something that just military and colleges had, and so you had to develop a system to be responsive with email. That was a learned habit. How do you, what is your process, or is it literally just, I'm just going to sit here and make sure that I respond to all the people that are in my box right now?
Like a lot of people, I probably am more apt to respond to people that I have a good answer for as opposed to ones that are harder.
It's an honest answer, which it's also a strategy that I employ. It's like, okay, I can help you. I can't help you guys.
But what I tell other people, and I should follow more myself, is even if you don't have an answer, just tell someone I'm working on an answer for you. I haven't forgot about you. And again, it's just that courtesy of letting someone know that you're connected with them, you haven't forgot about them. We talked a little bit before the interview started about Gary Vee, and I've you know, read a lot of his books and get a lot of wisdom from him, and part of that is just that simple act of communicating.
Absolutely.
With someone. You know, again, even if I don't have a great answer for you, I'm just going to communicate with you to tell you that, you know, I haven't forgotten about you. And I think that's, or obviously that's very simple, but it's also very, very profound.
And it's pretty important, especially, you know, when it's impossible to meet with everyone face to face to organize everything. Yeah. This may be a bad question, but I'll ask it anyway. Your craziest day at South By? Can you tell me one or a couple that are just really standout, crazy, nutty days?
Well, we've had lots of crazy good days, lots of crazy not so good days. I think that the challenges we've had in the last few years has, one of the consequences of our growth is realizing that we have become more of the story in and of ourselves. that something about South by Southwest can go into social media very quickly and create its own little, you know, firestorm. Yeah. And we've had enough of these crises now that we're a little bit better at dealing with them. But when this first began to happen, it was like, you know, the whole crisis communication stuff was a whole new world to us. Those were probably our biggest challenges.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've slowly learned to get a little better on that stuff too. And slowly learned to achieve a little more perspective there, and operative words being little. I mean, ultimately when you come out of these things, you kind of realize that Twitter or other social media are this small echo chamber, and you may not have been as much the center of the world as you thought you were during the time, although it's really hard to get that perspective when it's going on.
Sure, sure. What is a trait that helps you sort of power through this? It's always a moving target, you know. What helps you sort of move through in these moments?
I think that what helps you move through is, as with anything else, having a little more experience in this and knowing that, you know, as not fun as this is right now, it will eventually be over. and we'll get to the other side of this. Because, again, the first times we did this or involved with this, it just didn't seem like, you know, it's like, how is this going to change? And that was certainly a lot of the expert advice you had was like, this sucks, but it's going to get, you know, it's just got to run its course. And again, this whole idea of moving from this kind of we're an event company, and then moving to like, well, now you're kind of the focus of the news too. That was a big challenge or change, and still is a big challenge and change for us.
The eyes are watching. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, these are, in a sense, first world problems, right? You want to be in a position where people are watching like this, but it's also it creates a lot of stress, took a lot of learning for us to get a little better at this.
I have just one more question, and I can let you be freed for your evening, sir. What are you excited about for this year's festival? What's really got you? You've done so many of these now. What has you been like, oh, this is going to be a really good one?
I think that certainly all the buzz about blockchain is exciting, and even knowing that some of the currencies are tailing off a little bit now, that's exciting. The AI, the continued buzz around AI, around robots, around is this going to be the best thing ever for humanity? Is this going to be the worst thing ever for humanity? That's fascinating. I'm always very, very excited about a lot of the authors that we have coming to the event because I like to read, and I think those are some of our best speakers. But ultimately, you know, for myself and I think a lot of our staff, we've been planning this thing for a year. We tend to be a little bit tired coming to the event, and then you kind of get lifted up by this energy of very, very creative people coming to Austin. As many times as I've done it, I'm always surprised at how that kind of happens, that you just feel this sense of energy, this sense of creativity, this enthusiasm that happens when you bring all these creative people together and seeing the new ideas that come out of that, the new partnerships, the new opportunities. That's always really, really cool.
Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have, Hugh. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And before we go, some short announcements for our listeners. How Success Happens comes out weekly. To make sure you don't miss a single episode, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and SoundCloud, or wherever you get your favorite podcast. And don't be afraid to leave us a review. It helps us improve and reach more listeners just like you. For stories like this one on the mindset you need to start and grow a business, go to entrepreneur.com. And to let me know what you think about the show, find me on Twitter at Linda Lacina. That's the @ symbol, LINDALACINA. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.